This is the Winchester Talking newspaper for the week ending 21st of February 2014. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 21st of February 2014, which this week have been edited by Bill Argles and Irene Dowding. And your readers today are Shirley Parnell.
Hello.
Noel Thorpe-Tracy.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
And I am your presenter, Roy Faithful. Now, the main headlines this week are Bursa stole £70,000 from special school, businesses suffer as phone lines go down, and uni in bid to build new bar and leisure centre. So, may we have the story behind the first headline, please? Shirley.
Bursa stole £70,000 from special school. A former bursa of a Winchester Special School has been accused of defrauding it of more than £70,000, a court heard. Prosecutors claimed Linda Whittaker, 65, from Kingsworthy, abused her position as senior business manager at Osborne School in Winchester by submitting numerous bogus timesheets for herself and a friend, Patricia Hickman, between 2008 and 2012. Burnaby Shaw, prosecuting, said Whittaker submitted claims for hours she did not work and for hours and rates to which she and Miss Hickman were not entitled. Whittaker allegedly claimed £54,000 for herself between January the 1st, 2008, and September 19th, 2012, the day she was suspended. For Miss Hickman, Whittaker claimed about £18,000 between January the 1st, 2008, and July 31st, 2010. Mr. Shaw said she facilitated payment to herself and another over and above what she was due. The defendant exploited her position. He said Whittaker paid herself time and a half and double time, often for work she had not done, when her contract for the £42,000 a year post clearly stated she was supposed to always work above 37 hours a week. Her position of financial responsibility and knowledge of how the payroll operated gave her the opportunity to systematically defraud the school and Hampshire County Council, he told the jury. Mr. Shaw said Whittaker was only entitled to claim overtime in exceptional circumstances and when agreed in advance with her manager, the head teacher. In 2008, the then head, Rod Wakelam, agreed overtime for some temporary weekend work and said Miss Hickman, who had worked at the school until 2004, could help her on a casual paid basis. Mr. Shaw added that Whittaker will claim she had far more work than she could handle in 37 hours and so had to claim for overtime. However, when she handed the job over to Lisa Adam in 2012, she did not mention the difficulty in completing the workload in 37 hours a week, said Mr. Shaw. He said that in 2009, Whittaker was separately paid for clerking to the Board of Governors. In one period, she was entitled to be paid for 320 hours work. Instead, she claimed for 1,920 hours. He said Sonia O'Donnell, the current head, was under the impression that Miss Hickman was unpaid and volunteering to help Whittaker. The trial at Winchester Crown Court heard that Whittaker joined Osborne of Andover Road, then known as Lankhills, in 1987 and was promoted to bursar in 1995. The alleged offences came to light when she retired from full-time working and was replaced by Miss Adam in August 2012. The court heard that the jury will see much evidence comprising the school accounts. Whittaker of Loveden Lane, Kingsworthy, denies two charges of fraud. The trial before Judge Jane Miller, QC, and a 9-man, 3-woman jury is set to last 7 days. The case continues.
And let's have this story behind the second headline, please, Noel.
Yes, the headline is Businesses Suffer as Phone Lines Go Down. Several businesses in Winchester have faced continuing disruption this week after telephone line failures. Shops and cafes on Upper Brook Street and St George's Street have been without a line since last Tuesday, and one business has been told it could be weeks before it is sorted. It means that shops are unable to take payments by credit or debit card, use the internet, and make or receive calls. Workers have criticised BT for failing to update them, despite the telephone exchange sitting just yards away. Park Life Kids has hired a mobile credit card machine at a cost of £80 per week. The manager, Danielle Pendlebury, said they hired it out of necessity. She said the owner, Maria Harvey, had a statement from BT this morning where they said it could be weeks before our phone lines come back and they didn't seem to know what's wrong. We've had to pay to hire a mobile machine because otherwise we have no way of taking card payments, and as a small business we're affected a bit more than bigger businesses would be. The majority of our payments are taken by card, so it's a real problem and we don't know when it will be sorted. It is believed that the basement of the telephone exchange has been under 4 feet of water for over a week, causing damage to underground cables. Tom Romita, owner of Tom's Deli, estimated he had lost hundreds of pounds since the lines went down. He said, "I suggested running temporary cables over ground, and they said it was a health and safety issue. I suggested putting us on 4G, and they told me to buy a dongle. If they were 10 miles away, I could understand, but they're less than 30 metres away." The Citizens Advice Bureau on St George's Street has remained open despite having no email or online system, internet or outgoing calls, and has spent an estimated £350 on mobile internet dongles and other emergency maintenance devices. Jenny Meadows, Chief Executive of Winchester CAB, said it's been a stressful time. BT engineers visited the CAB on Tuesday and it seems the problem in its office has been dealt with. However, Gervaids and Shoe Repairs, both on Upper Brook Street, confirm they're still facing disruption. A spokesman for BT said, "We had a cable chamber which flooded and caused loss of service to around 100 properties in the area. We've cleared one cable, and we also replaced around 60 metres of damaged cable to clear the vast majority of faults when this work was completed on February the 14th. We had around 20 residual faults left which did not clear. Engineers have been working on these remaining faults, and we hope that these would be cleared by the end of today," which was last Wednesday.
And the story behind the third headline, please, Jane.
And the third headline is Uni in bid to build new bar and leisure centre. Collaboration could benefit whole community. Winchester Civic Chiefs have revealed the university wants to develop a sports centre on playing fields at Bar End. The news comes as the City Council reviews its plans for the River Park Leisure Centre. Councillor Keith Wood, the leader of the City Council, told Cabinet last Wednesday that Professor Joy Carter, the university's Vice-Chancellor, has written to him to say it would be in a position to make a significant capital contribution to a scheme and would welcome the opportunity to discuss further a possible development at Bar End. But some city councillors are not so sure that landowner Tesco will sell the garrison ground. Labour group leader Chris Pine said, "We want to see the best option for the best deal we can get because it's going to be very expensive." Civic chiefs are discussing options for the replacement of the River Park Leisure Centre, including building on the current site or spreading onto the tennis courts, artificial pitch and cricket pitch. Many residents, mainly in Hyde, are angry that the council's preferred option, a new site at North Walls, involves a loss of green space. Councillor Wood said, We have listened to the strongly voiced, and there's an argument for the relocation to provide high-quality leisure facilities for the district. Members of the public raise concerns over the proposed rebuilding at the current site, citing flooding issues, but stated that the facilities desperately need updating. Emma Back of Fit for the Future Pressure Group, which is pressing for a new centre at Bar End, said, "It's time for the City Council, County Council and the University, the key landowners, to do more for the future of sport for this district." Councillor Kelsey Lowney, leader of the Liberal Democrat group, said she was concerned that Professor Carter was suggesting the Surrey Sports Park in Guildford would be the ideal model for Winchester. Councillor Lowney said it was monopolised by Surrey University and elite teams to the detriment of public access. A University of Winchester spokesman said, "The university already has extensive sports facilities at Bar End. The Winchester Sports Stadium already includes an athletics track with supporting facilities for field events, an all-weather pitch complete with floodlighting, and a large pavilion offering changing rooms, showers and meeting room space. The cost of building at Bar End is yet to be determined, as there are a range of potential options to cost."
And that concludes the headline stories. And now we continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, your say, historical items, first person, chronicle comment, and Belgarum diary. And I'll start with the death notices. Appleton, Dennis Walter Appleton, peacefully at home, aged 69. Ellis, Oliver Ellis, aged 33. Gillett, Derek Gillett, peacefully in his sleep, aged 83. Groves, Leslie Arthur Groves, formerly of Trowbridge, Winchester and Piddle Trentide, peacefully at Furlorn Nursing Home, aged 95. Hamerton, Marjorie Hamerton, peacefully at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 91. Hine, Brian Hine, at Westacre Nursing Home, Winchester. Gwyn Howell, Marmaduke Gwyn Howell, peacefully, aged 93. Le Marquand, Wendy Ann, nay Faithful Le Marquand, peacefully following a short illness, aged 65. Lukey, Patricia Mary Lukey, peacefully in Countess Mountbatten Hospice, aged 76. North, George Wilson North, in hospital, aged 86 years. O'Donoghue, Florrie Pat O'Donoghue, in hospital, aged 85. Pickup, Rosemary Ann Pickup. Sermol, Helmut Ron Sermol, peacefully after a long illness, aged 85. Shell, Marion Shell, unexpectedly but following a long illness, in Winchester, aged 78. Soul, Linda Jane Lynn Nay Stevens Soul, aged 62, peacefully at home. Thornton, Dorothy La Patorelle Dot Thornton, aged 83. Tombleson, Joan Nay Curtis Tombleson, peacefully after a long illness, aged 85. And finally, Torbett, Kathleen Torbett, peacefully at home. And now Shirley has Christian comment.
And this is headed, "A Better and More Glorious Existence." And it's written by Terry E. Hemmig. I spend a lot of my time looking round my house for things I have lost. It often happens as I'm about to go out and causes panic. Of course, they're not lost, but exactly where I left them, and I've just been looking for them in the wrong place. We also use this phrase when we talk of our family and friends who die. "Sorry to hear of your sad loss" is a common English greeting to those who are grieving, or "she lost her mother when she was young" when we talk of a tragic bereavement. We have had such a shock in our parish, where our vicar, who had only been here for just over 4 months, suddenly died. The feelings of panic, sadness, and bewilderment are palpable in our community. In the Gospels, Jesus talks about losses. He tells of a woman who loses a precious gold coin and sweeps through the house until she finds it. He also tells of a shepherd who loses one of his flock of 100 sheep and, abandoning the 99, goes in search of it. Both stories end with the rejoicing of the people who find what they have been searching for. And Jesus goes on to tell us that God rejoices when we are restored to him. It is obviously a call to people to turn to God and has been used in the preaching of the church down through the ages. God is not looking for the good, but for those who have recognized their failure and turn back to him for help and to be rescued. Yet I think if we take the terminology of being lost as a metaphor for death, then there is an application here also. When a piece of pottery shatters and we have to throw it away, we have lost it. We may have a memory of it or even a photograph, but that is the end of it. The main religions do not believe that about death. We assert that this life is but a part of our existence and that we continue after the grave. We cannot describe what that existence will be like, for we have not experienced it, but we believe it will be better and more glorious than this one. To continue the metaphor, we may say those whom we have lost have been found by and in Christ. I trust that if you are suffering from the loss of a beloved person, you will be able to find comfort in this. Canon Michael St. John's Channel, 1953 to 2014. May he rest in peace and rise in glory.
We'll continue with letters to the editor. Now, if you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, this can be done by telephoning 01962 860 836 or emailing news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk or by writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO238AL. There are 13 letters this week, and we'll start with one read by Noel.
Yes, Mr. and Mrs. Bushell say the youth of today are all right by us. Sir, last Sunday night, whilst returning home from attending a dinner party, we had a puncture in Southgate Street near the city centre. Every young man who walked by offered help, as well as two young ladies, so thank you all. What's wrong with the youth of today? Nothing. Mr. and Mrs. A.R. Bushell, Brayside Close, Oliver's Battery, Winchester.
And Catherine Morris writes, plans will retain playing fields. Sir, John Doyle is incorrect in his criticism of plans to build a leisure centre at Bar End, letters February the 13th. All the proposals for a new leisure centre at Bar End retain the playing fields, and this is an important part of the proposals that can be accessed at www.fitforthefuture.org. That's fit4thefuture.org, says Catherine Morris, Carmen's Lane, Compton.
And this one from Christopher Pankhurst, headed, these job cuts just don't make sense. Sir, it's very worrying that 550 staff working on flood control will be losing their jobs this year because the Environment Agency budget is being cut by 15%. Astonishingly, the government has also ended the obligation on local authorities to prepare for climate adaptation plans. The latest blow is a reduction in the number of DEFRA officials responsible for these matters, from 38 to 6. All this is against the advice of scientists whose job is to advise the government on climate and flooding. Christopher Pankhurst, Green Hill Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
P. Peter Mitchell says the city must beware of vested interests. Sir, Rees Silver Hill, it does seem wrong that the City Council is being led by the nose by a commercial firm of property developers whose interest is purely in doing a deal and not in the long-term interests of Winchester. To suggest that Winchester can sustain a further 95,000 feet of retail space is ridiculous. Of course, as they have pre-let 18,500 square feet to Sainsbury's, their store is presumably being demolished. This development, which has been described as a white elephant, would make the Brook Centre a dead elephant. The probable outcome will be that not only Silver Hill, but the Brook Centre and the High Street will all be half full. The council should employ a professional company to investigate whether it is in the city's long-term future to go ahead with this scheme and not rely on retail consultants who have a vested interest in the scheme going ahead. I do hope this letter is not reprinted in 5 years' time. Peter Mitchell, Drove Lane, Alsford.
And Dave Alderson writes, potholes? Blame it all on fracking. Sir, like Belgarum, Chronicle February the 13th, I too have been intrigued by the number of road potholes in the absence of penetrating frosts, even in whole stretches of newly laid tarmac. I'm sure someone has an expert answer, but I theorise that in a small pothole following heavy rain, the water is compressed by the tyres of traffic and is forced under pressure between the top surface and the older one below. Thereafter, the water trapped between layers would be moved around under the weight of traffic, gradually breaking up the road. A sort of interlayer hydraulics, or as we now know it, fracking. Dave Alderson, Cherry Close, South Wanston.
Kate McIntosh says, poor decisions are an extravagance. Sir, Judith Martin is right that there is a democratic deficit at the heart of decision-making in our historic city, with not one member of cabinet living in the city or representing a central ward. This is not, or should not be, a party political matter, but when it comes to major planning and investment decisions, under the present structure, there is a lack of detailed, intimate local knowledge in the most powerful committees, a knowledge only gained by years of habitation and direct electoral responsibility to Winchester citizens. This cannot be rectified by parachuting in national consultants to write reports on major development proposals. They can't afford the time to make the in-depth studies and analyses on the meagre fees offered, and so present findings of little practical use. This could be improved if the town forum were given greater authority, a proper budget and staff, avoiding legal procedures needed to set up a parish council and another tier of elections. Winchester City Council will say they cannot afford the expense, but there is no extravagance so wasteful as poor decision-making. Kate McIntosh, West End Terrace, Winchester.
Reliance on fossil fuels a blind alley, says Jim Malpas. Sir, I query the conclusions of Charlie Flint in the letters February the 6th, who presumably thinks the possibility that solar and wind-generated electricity could sometimes fail, meaning they are totally unsuitable for use and should be abandoned in favour of fossil fuels. Renewable energies will work most of the time and will continue to do so. Fossil fuels will only work while available and affordable. Supplies are not infinite, and there is already a serious concern about fuel poverty and the many people who find it difficult to afford their energy bills. The cost of oil and gas is increasing, with increased demand caused by economic and population growth, and will continue to do so. The much-hyped fracking revolution will not help. Major companies have written off millions of dollars of investment in shale in the USA. At the WINAC seminar, a speaker confirmed that shale gas in the US was uneconomic and was being sold at below cost price. As energy costs increase, we either economise or continue as we are until forced to cut back. If by that stage we have failed to invest in alternatives, we'll have nowhere to go. Reliance on fossil fuels is leading us up a blind alley. Climate change is happening and will only get worse. Like a kettle on a just-switched-off hot plate, there is enough CO2 in the atmosphere to keep the planet warming for some time, even if emissions stop tomorrow, but they're still accelerating. The UN target of a safe global temperature increase is 20 degrees centigrade. Even this level is now considered hazardous, and with business as usual, we're on course to reach 40 degrees or more. The speed of change is unknown, but the current direction of travel is certain, and a failure to act will cause devastation. Politicians are failing completely to tackle this, and the media perpetuate a false debate when, among scientists, there is none. Jim Malpas, Wellsmead Road, Bishopstoke.
And Sharon Bruty of Kingsworthy writes, "Making waves in flooded roads." Sir, the road closure at Loveden Lane is consistently being ignored. All the good work carried by the Highways Agency, laying sandbags to protect the pub and the houses in King's Close, where all the water ends up, is undone by waves created. Assuming these people are ignorant of the knock-on effects of driving through the closed road, do they not realise that going through the floods in Loveden Lane could flood King's Close? We did actually have a vehicle which got stuck in the ditch trying to dodge the road-closed barriers. I understand people's frustrations at having to find longer, more difficult routes, but I'm sure most folk wouldn't like to be responsible for flooding people's homes and businesses. Of course, there will always be a few idiots who relish driving along Springvale Road at 40 miles per hour, flooding driveways and soaking pedestrians. Hopefully, they won't suffer too much damage hitting the huge potholes developing along Springvale Road. And that was from Sharon Bruty of the King Charles, Loveden Lane, Kingsworthy.
This is from Mr. A. Leonard, and it said, "Why do we ignore lessons of history? Sir, re the terrible floods that have beset our nation. Perhaps little could have been done to prevent much of the damage caused and lives lost. However, lessons of recent and past years have not been learned. The Victorians thought it essential that wave breakers be emplaced on our shores, and many remain doing a good job of breaking them up before they race ashore and cause great damage. So much should and could have been done to prevent repeated flooding of homes, where raw sewage and electricity cut-off is becoming the norm. Millions are now to be spent on dredging rivers, gullies and ditches. Rural neglect has led to national disgrace, where just a little thought and effort was all that was needed. We have the knowledge, but lack the ability to implement systems that could overcome the dangers that will face us in the future." Mr. A. Leonard, Lyle Court, Stanmore, Winchester.
John Pittman asks, "Is it time to bring back the lengthsman?" Sir, I was brought up in Headbourne Worthy, which is now suffering from flooding and rising spring waters. In the 1940s and 1950s, the village had a lengthsman named Mr. Dunn. We called him the roadman, and in summer he kept all the verges trimmed by hand. In winter, he cleaned out all the ditches, cleared the pipes under the roads and railways, and ensured all the gullies were maintained to take water off the roads. These ditches and pipes never get yearly attention now like they did then. So we are seeing flooding like we have never seen before. I know this winter has been exceptional, but it is in Springvale after all. The springs have always risen, but back then the water could get away much easier into cleared out ditches. Going back further in time, the water meadows through the Itchen Valley had sluice gates installed so that water could be passed into the channels across the meadows, which flooded in winter. This lessened the amount of water entering the Itchen and lessened the risk of flooding downstream, similar to what the Environment Agency have tried to do at Easton. I think employing a full-time lengthsman would in the long term be cheaper than sending four men out with an expensive digger to attend to problems when they occur, often too late. And why not go back to flooding the water meadows in winter? That's how they got their name. John Pittman, Tor Close, Aldbrook, Eastleigh.
And Richard Gibson writes, "It's called River Park for a reason." Sir, if you were building a new recreation centre, would you choose an inundated floodplain site or somewhere with plenty of space on higher ground, like Barton Farm? Nobody seems to have mentioned the fact that the current site is subject to periodic flooding, which is likely to become more frequent if the wet winters forecast as a result of climate change become the norm. Councillors are discussing the future of the leisure centre this week, but I would be surprised if anyone treats the flooding issue as a serious problem with the city centre site. That's from Richard Gibson of North Walls Winchester, and is accompanied by a photograph of the leisure centre with its entire car park underwater.
And this one from Valerie O'Leary, headed Southern Water Should Apologise. Sir, read the closure of Main Road, Colden Common. I would be interested to know who at Southern Water made the decision to close this road at this time of the year. Not only has it caused great problems to businesses with loss of income, but no consideration has been given to the people who use the road frequently, whether it be travelling to and from work, or someone like myself who uses it at least three times a week to pick grandchildren up from school. This could have been carried out in the better weather, where there would have been less chance of it being affected by rain or snow. I am of the opinion Southern Water have no regard for the inconvenience this has caused, and feel very strongly that the person responsible should publicly apologise to all the residents and users of this road. Valerie O'Leary, Rancid Way, Badger Farm.
And this is from a grateful Pippa Scott. Sir, we live in inner city Winchester. I would like to mention the people working hard to keep our community dry and functional. I, for one, am so relieved that some form of community still exists. The Royal Navy erected a barrier in St Bede Primary School and two barriers in Park Avenue, with additional flood defences in Water Lane. Fire crews came from the city, Hampshire and the Isle of Wight, and have worked day and night. I thank you for your service. Sorry the coffee was so strong. My children attend St Bede, where the amazing staff have also been working long hours, and I suspect probably not paid for those hours. They have shown such passion and commitment to their job. Above all, Louise Fitzpatrick, the head, should be regarded in the recognised in the community for the service she carries on. I thank Lawrence Talks from the Environment Agency, who I believe masterminded the barriers. I believe in your thinking. My garden is dry since you appeared, and so is my kitchen. Floods may still occur, but I can see people working their hardest to prevent disruption. In our blame culture, I, for one, will not blame you. Maybe we should all take the blame for not respecting nature. Maybe it's just a new pattern of weather. Whatever, I can see people in Winchester working hard to help. For this, we should all have gratitude. Somerset and the Thames Valley are less easy to help. The Thames is a large beast, and Somerset is vast. I feel for the people there. Thank you, all of the above, for showing me that Winchester has community in a crisis. Thank you. Pippa Scott, North Walls, Winchester.
And that's the end of the letters to the editor for this week. Thank you to everyone who contributed. And now it's time for your say. Passers-by in the Winchester area were asked, do you agree that whole life sentences should be seen out in prison? Jane has the answers.
And the first person asked was Lucy Mouzet, 28, student of Grange Road, St Cross, who said, it all depends. I can understand it being applied to a serial offender, but it takes a lot of resources. If the crime causes ripple effects on others, then yes. Doug Ross, 38, city council worker of Lyndhurst Close Hairstock, said, the law is very clear. The old saying goes, if you can't do the time, don't do the crime. But does it warrant such a hefty sentence? The very notion of reform is no longer applicable. Andrew Short, 36, a teacher of the Close Winchester, said, I agree with the principle, as long as the sentence fits the crime, but I do think a review should be allowed at some stage. And Barbara Langdon Mudge, 87, retired of Denham Close, Abbots Barton, said, one can usually rely on the judges, provided they are not too afraid of public opinion and stick to what they say. We should abide by their sentencing if it so fits.
And we're going back through the years now for news items from our files, starting with 25 years ago, read by Shirley.
Right. 25 years ago, February 24th, 1989. Students call for free education. Students marched through Winchester city centre last Thursday in a peaceful protest against government plans to replace grants with loans. It was part of a national day of action organised by the National Union of Students, and protesters from colleges throughout the South took to the streets to shout their case for a free and open education system. Some 500 students from the King Alfred's College and the School of Art were joined by a handful of lecturers in the region's biggest demonstration. Carrying banners and chanting, "Education is a right, not a privilege," they made their way up the high street to the castle, where a petition containing over 2,200 signatures was handed to county education chiefs. And this bit, Environment Minister Mrs. Virginia Bottomley has called on car manufacturers to clearly label vehicles capable of using unleaded petrol. Mrs. Bottomley, in Basingstoke last week to launch Hampshire's Lead-Free Petrol Week, said that with the widespread concern for the environment, people had a duty to use unleaded. At most, it required only a small adjustment to be made to the engine, and many garages would do it for free. Mrs. Bottomley said that a year ago, 500 petrol stations sold unleaded. Now there were 4,300, and the figure was rising by 250 stations a week.
Let's go back 50 years ago, Noel.
Yes, two items from February the 22nd, 1964. The first is headed Petition to Retain Hospital Facilities. A deputation led by the Vicar of Andover, the Reverend D. Dr. I.W.J. Machin, has been to the Ministry of Health with a petition signed by over 5,000 people in the Andover district calling for the full retention of facilities at Andover War Memorial Hospital, a service which is threatened under the Hospital Plan for England and Wales with the building in 1976 of the new regional hospital at Winchester. Reporting on the result of the visit at the meeting of Andover Rural District Council's General Purposes Committee on Friday week, Mr. J.D. Threadgill, MBE, chairman, stated that they did not have a good reception. And second story, a five-year-old girl reported as missing arrived back at her home in Southampton after walking the round trip to Eastleigh. David Burnett, 6, and his sister Amanda, 5, had left their home in Gordon Avenue, Portswood, to play at the local recreation ground, but decided they liked the recreation ground at Lee Road, Eastleigh, better. So they walked to the town, arriving safely. They played on the swings, but became separated in the toilets. David was found looking for his sister and taken to Eastleigh Police Station. Preparations were made for a widespread search when, soon after 7 p.m, a tired Amanda arrived back home, having walked the whole of the return journey alone. Ah.
And back to 100 years ago, Jane.
And 100 years ago was February the 21st, 1914. Fined 5 shillings for hawking laces. Winchester City Bench. Jazz Stanley, a miserable-looking old man, scantily clad, pleaded guilty to hawking without a licence. On Monday evening, prisoner was hawking bootlaces for sale in Cheesehill Street, and amongst others he accosted Police Constable Asling, who was in plain clothes. It was stated prisoner had been in and out of the workhouse for years, and it was the fine weather of the past few days that brought him out again. Magistrates fined him 5 shillings, and the mayor told him that if he went back to the workhouse, the fine would not be enforced. And secondly, a letter. Sir, will you kindly insert the following? Another gross insult to myself as master of the Tedworth Foxhounds was perpetrated yesterday in the form of laying a drag from Longstock. I look to you, the tenant farmers in the hunt, to take every precaution to prevent such scoundrels from laying drags across your land in the future. Those who commit these outrages are of the lowest type of scoundrels and are not fit to bear the name of Englishmen. Those who know their names and are shielding them are every bit as bad.
And finally, back to 200 years ago.
Right, 200 years ago, February 21st, 1814. Great losses in customs fire. Fire at the custom house. The actual loss to government by the destruction of the custom house cannot be accurately calculated. Books, bonds, indentures, pearls, corals, valuable property of every description, and securities of all kinds have been consumed. Half a million sterling will scarcely cover the loss occasioned by this calamity. The insurance offices will be deeply affected. And then the second part of this. General von Blücher, commander of the Silesian army, having penetrated to Nancy, the principal city of Lorraine, answered the address presented to him by a declaration. A just and wise providence has conducted our arms into the French territories. All Europe is at length awakened from her destructive slumber by the insatiable ambition of the man who, for the last 15 years, has had the direction of the fate of France. And what has France gained by this immense quantity of bloodshed? A whole generation of mankind, and all her youth, from 20 to 30 years of age, have been devoured by the sword of your war.
Right. Back to the present, then. First person this week is by Ronald Allison, and it's read by Noel.
Yes, his heading is "Politics can be tough, but needn't be nasty." The death last month of Sir David Price, the Conservative MP for Eastleigh for 37 years from 1955 to 1992, brought back many memories of time very different from today. As a reporter on this newspaper, then published each Saturday with only adverts on the front page, I covered the meeting at which the equally youngish David Price was adopted by the local Conservatives to be their candidate for the newly formed constituency of Eastleigh. He was typical of many Conservative candidates of the time, in that he had served in the Second World War and then had several years of business experience before switching to politics. He was not, however, of the "my party, right or wrong" persuasion, and throughout his many years in the Commons showed independent and at times liberal views that may well have held him back from ministerial appointments. I remember him with great affection, and I followed his career with particular interest. I also followed him into Parliament, not, I hasten to say, as an MP, but in the early 1960s as a BBC correspondent. Whether or not I agreed with his views was not then important, but I am now impressed by learning from the various obituaries that have been published what he perceived to be changing standards and attitudes in the political world, changes, he would say, that were not for the best. For instance, it was recorded in the Times that, on his retirement in 1992, he said that the House of Commons he was leaving had less consensus, less compromise, less compassion, less comradeship than in the House of 1955. He also deplored what he saw as greater rudeness and personal abuse, and memorably observed, "Democracy is more at risk from bad manners than it is from bad ideas." These days, like most of us, I have no direct contact with Parliament other than by what I read, see or hear. But I do sometimes despair, particularly when watching Prime Minister's questions on a Wednesday. Do they not realise? Has the penny not yet dropped? Don't they get it? Listen, we, between us all, have voted for you. Not all of us, of course, but enough of us in each case to send you to represent us, to work for us, and between you all, to govern us. We, I think, want to respect you, but my word, you sometimes make it hard to do so. Not all of you, but quite a percentage, and from all sides of the House. We're going to do quite a bit of electing in the next year or so. Local and European elections are in sight. Next year it will be 2015, 5 years since the last general election. Make it hard for us to make choices by first winning our respect as candidates. Sir David Price did.
Jane is now going to read the editorial comment.
And the editorial comment this week has the positive heading, "Public spiritedness is alive and well." As the Duke of Wellington once said about the Battle of Waterloo, it was a damn close-run thing. Winchester looks to have escaped the worst ravages of flooding through an alliance of cooperation between various agencies, a lot of hard work, and the excellent idea of using water meadows north of the city as giant storage areas. The Environment Agency, city and county councils, police, fire, ambulance, army and navy are to be congratulated, even if perhaps only a few more inches of water may have seen a vast swathe of the city centre deluged. However, in many places, especially Hambledon, now approaching 50 days under water, things are much grimmer. Villagers are growing sick of the 24-hour whir of pumps and the nagging fear that a power cut could see the machines fail and their homes swamped. But across the district, there have been countless examples of neighbour helping neighbour and the kindness of strangers. It is easy for the pessimists to rail against the end of community spirit and the rise of selfishness. There have been examples of speeding motorists creating bow waves that flood homes, for example. But if the floods of 2014 tell us anything about modern society, it is that public-spiritedness is alive and well.
And now we've got Belgarum Diary, which is an alternative look at the news. And we'll start with Shirley.
Right. It's headed, Mary would have had no truck with such traffic. What would Mary Russell Mitford, 1787 to 1855, have thought? She was born in Broad Street, Oresford, and went on to write Our Village, a classic of 19th century literature. It was a period noted for its fine manners and gentility. There's a plaque that marks her birthplace. There. This week, many houses in Broad Street have posters in their windows highlighting the battle against lorries rumbling past their homes. The name of the campaign? The Very Ungenteel Trucked Off. And we have a photograph of this sign in the window of one of the houses, and it says, Trucked Off. Petition to Hampshire County Council and Winchester City Council. Stop HGV through traffic in Oresford and surrounding villages. And there's also a picture of a plaque on the house, presumably where she lived or she was born, in Oresford.
Brian's painting pictures in sand. The corridors of Royal Hampshire County Hospital are an unlikely place to see a near-lost art form. But Brian Pike is displaying his unique sand paintings in the Butterfield Wing in aid of the Magic Wand Children's Charity. Sand painting, or marmor tinto, is thought to date back to ancient Japan. It was practiced in Georgian times in this country, especially on the Isle of Wight, with its wide range of colours, but became unfashionable last century. Mr. Pike has helped to revive interest. And this is accompanied by a picture of Mr. Pike's version of the famous portrait of Winston Churchill by Graham Sutherland.
And this one is Whispered Words from Great War. The story of conscientious objectors imprisoned at Winchester during the Great War will feature on BBC radio and television programmes next week. On Thursday, Radio Solent and South Today will tell the tale of how those incarcerated for their beliefs kept in touch with each other by circulating a journal handwritten on toilet paper. The Winchester Whisperer will be handed around the conches for news and entertainment with articles, sketches and poetry. Inmates would write and illustrate the pages using ink which had been saved in thimbles sealed within blocks of wax. A needle was used to apply the ink to the sheets, which were bound with canvas from mail bags. Prison officers could not locate any copies of the journal, and the only surviving edition is now housed at the Society of Friends Library in London.
Flood Spring Art College, full circle. Interesting how things often come full circle. The floods have caused the partial evacuation of the School of Art in Park Avenue, with the buildings on the west side unusable for several days. Many students have been relocated temporarily to the Guildhall in the Broadway. This was the original location of the art school in the 1870s, in the rooms above what is now the Pitcher and Piano on the corner with Colebrook Street.
And the next item, Bumbalgaram, actually refers to two pictures that it has got, a picture of a depressing piece of flooded field and a road closed sign, where they refer to this. The floods have been revealing how those lovely valleys were formed in the Hampshire countryside. Take a look at Cheriton Wreck and the picture below, nestling at the foot of two slopes. It now has a river coursing gently across the cricket pitch, a scene repeated across the district, including the entrance to the Sir John Moore Barracks, Littleton. Meanwhile, local businesses have more immediate concerns. When is a road closure not a road closure? When it's the A272 at Bramdean. The sign in the picture below is a couple of miles west at New Cheriton Crossroads. The Hinton Arms at Hinton Ampner and George Can Garden Machinery in Bramdean are quite reasonably pointing out that actually the road is still open for quite some way. The only part actually shut is the main road outside the Fox Inn. Wood Lane is still open. The sign is put up to stop HGVs, though that didn't stop a Slovenian Arctic bullying its way through on Sunday, largely because there was nowhere to turn round. And the picture's got a road closed sign, and next to it a sign saying, "The Hinton Arms is open, as normal, for business."
Right, now this week's announcements, and we have one from Open Sight, the Eastleigh-based charity for visually impaired people. And they're offering Winchester Talking Newspaper listeners the chance of joining an exclusive Easter holiday. Leaving Open Sight head office in Basingstoke on Wednesday the 16th of April, guests will make the leisurely drive to the Bradbury Hotel near Worthing for a week-long stay. We're told that Bradbury Hotel provides all guests, visually impaired or not, with excellent standards of service and accommodation. All rooms are en suite. During the stay, guests can enjoy afternoon refreshments, entertainment each evening, and a day trip to Bentley Wildfowl Reserve. On Easter Sunday, a visit to a local church for a traditional Easter service has been arranged. A special price of £422 per person is quoted. For more details and to book, call Terry on 023 8064 6377. That's Terry, 023 8064 6377. And now, here's what's on. The Mountaineers' Experiences. Andy Kirkpatrick, British mountaineer, big wall climber, winter expedition specialist and stunt safety advisor, will be sharing his experiences of some of the most difficult terrains in the world at the Lights in Andover on Wednesday, February 26 at 7:45 p.m. The published writer and filmmaker has climbed Yosemite's El Capitan 15 times, including a 12-day solo of the solo ascent of the Reticent Wall. His work as a stunt safety advisor plays a significant role in the presentation, from Charlie and the Chocolate Factory to the heights of Patagonia. For tickets priced at £12, please see www.thelights.org.uk or telephone 01264 368 368. And there's the Apollo Comic in Winchester. There are still tickets left to see stand-up Robert Beckett at Winchester's Theatre Royal on Sunday, March 16th at 7:30 p.m. The comedian, who is most known for his regular appearances on Live at the Apollo and Mock the Week and 8 out of 10 Cats, started performing in 2009 and went on to win 4 competitions in his first year. Tickets cost £13 or £11 for concessions. To book, call 01962 840 440 or visit www.theatreroyalwinchester.co.uk. And there is a Mansfield Park Symposium. Gilliam Dow of the University of Southampton will introduce 4 speakers to mark the bicentenary of Jane Austen's Mansfield Park with a symposium at Chawton House Library. On Saturday, March the 8th, between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m, Katie Halsey of the University of Stirling will talk about Mansfield Park then and now. Deirdre Shauna Lynch of the University of Toronto will discuss Quoting Fanny on editing Mansfield Park. Anthony Mandel of Cardiff University will talk about 1814, a bad year for the novel. And Mary Ann O'Farrell of Texas A&M University will conclude with The Arbitrary in Austin. Tickets cost £40 each, including lunch and refreshments. To book, visit www.chawtonhouse.org. And finally, Guildhall's Easter Vintage Fair. Winchester Guildhall is to host the biggest indoor vintage fair on Easter Sunday. From 11 a.m. to 4 p.m, vintage traders from far and wide will come together, bringing everything from fashion to accessories, collectibles and housewares. It will celebrate Easter with live music, a vintage photo booth, beauty salon, maker's lounge and a gingham tea parlour. Rosettes and prizes will be on offer for those judged best dressed, and all guests will be in with a chance of winning other vintage treats. Entry costs £2, £1 for students and pensioners. Children under 12 can enter for free. Now, lighting up time ends on Friday the 21st of January at 7:07 a.m, begins at 5:32 p.m. On Wednesday 26th of January, I've got the dates wrong, haven't I? Yes, it's 21st of February at 7:07 a.m, begins at 5:32 p.m. On Wednesday the 26th of February, it ends at 6:56 a.m. and begins at 5:41 p.m. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding. Her telephone number is 01962 870 370. If there's a problem with your Sapphire player, please try plugging it in and recharging before returning it as faulty. Now we're going to continue with further items of general news, and we'll start with one read by Jane.
And the first item of general news is TV Stewart has news on £4 million hospice appeal. TV newsman Alistair Stewart was on hand to help launch a £4 million hospice appeal. The ITV presenter was at Naomi House and Jack's Place in Sutton Scotney on Monday, which is also hoping to go greener and save £100,000 a year in running costs. It is currently using two hydrotherapy pools and laundry rooms, but will downsize to just one of each, enabled by a new undercover bridge that will link Naomi House and Jack's Place. Other features include making the current 10 bedrooms more spacious, an additional 3 bedrooms, bigger bathrooms, a bereavement suite, a new suite of emergency rooms, updated parent accommodation with lift access, larger communal areas, and a new entrance foyer for families. Mr. Stewart, who is patron of the appeal, said, "Since 1997, some of the equipment has got a bit old. The face of the building, although lovely, is not as good as it needs to be. It's all about giving the best possible facilities to the folk having the worst possible time." The launch, also attended by the Mayor and Mayoress of Winchester, Ernie and Barbara Jeffs, heard from Naomi House and Jack's Place Chairman David Holmes and Chief Executive Chris Robinson, who both stressed how important the upgrade is to improving the care they give to young people with life-limiting conditions. David Holmes said they are halfway to the £4 million needed. He said, "I am confident that we can do it. What this refurbishment does is future-proof Naomi House, because it will make sure that the facilities that we are able to provide will last for years to come, are in some of the best in England, and that is really exciting." And it is accompanied by a picture of Alistair Stewart with the mayor and the fundraisers, and also some of the young people smiling broadly in their specially devised wheelchairs.
Mystery dog poison strikes again. A deadly toxin affecting dogs in the New Forest has struck two from the same family, killing one and leaving the other seriously ill. A pair of whippets were taken ill after being exercised at Holmesley, the same area where one of the other recent victims was affected. 5-year-old Poppy was taken to the vets after she cut herself and suddenly lost her appetite. She was put on a drip but suffered kidney failure and died 3 days later. 4-year-old Ashley fell ill after being taken for a walk in the same area on the same day, but appears to be making a recovery. Vets suspect that the disease is a version of Alabama rot, first seen in the United States in the 1980s, and thought to be related to a toxin produced by E. coli. It has killed almost 20 dogs across the UK, including at least 12 in the New Forest. Many of the dogs taken ill in the forest have been treated by staff at Anderson Moores, a specialist veterinary practice based at Hursley. A spokesman urged dog owners to look out for skin lesions on their pets, adding, "If your dog is affected, early recognition of the disease and aggressive management is likely to lead to the best outcome." It's important to stress that case numbers are very low and that this disease is not isolated to the New Forest.
Households wrongly hit by bedroom tax. More than 230 people in Hampshire have been unlawfully charged the bedroom tax after a government blunder, it can be revealed. They are residents who have lived in the same council or housing association property since 1996, making them exempt from the measure. However, they wrongly had hundreds of pounds of their housing benefit deducted because they were deemed to have spare bedrooms. All must now be refunded after the Department for Work and Pensions admitted tenants in the same home for more than 17 years should not have been hit. Labour seized on the figures to warn the bedroom tax had descended into farce, and it accused ministers of misleading people about the blunder, having claimed only 5,000 residents would be hit nationwide when the real figure was up to 50,000. In Hampshire, the largest number of people affected is in Southampton, 95, followed by Basingstoke and Deane, 52, Eastleigh, 38, New Forest, 31, and Winchester, 22. That makes 238. But the total is certain to be far higher because other local councils have not replied to Freedom of Information requests.
And this one is headed, "Butchers Urged to Show Off Their Best." Butchers across Hampshire are preparing for this year's Great Hampshire Sausage and Pie Competition. The competition attracted more than 170 entries across 12 categories last year and is an opportunity for butchers to showcase their finest fare. The categories include traditional pork sausage, meatballs and faggots, Hampshire charcuterie, black pudding, hot and cold eating pies, Hampshire sausage and, new to this year, young sausage maker. Mike Wright, chairman of the Hampshire Fair, the county food group, said, "Since it was introduced in 2001, the competition has highlighted the quality and choice available locally through farm shops, independent butchers and at Hampshire's farmer markets. Over the past year, support has really grown for local independent retailers and producers as consumers question the provenance of their food. This competition celebrates quality, handmade, flavoursome products made from British meat and local ingredients."
Staff are flying high. Southampton Airport has been named the best in the country at a prestigious awards ceremony. The Eastleigh-based terminal was handed the title of Top UK Airport by Wanderlust Readers in the 2014 Wanderlust Readers Travel Awards. Thousands of readers of the magazine had their say in the decision before the announcement was made at the glamorous Destinations show at Earl's Court in London. Southampton Airport ranked top for UK airports with a satisfaction rating of 87.5%. Final positions were based on an average score for the entry converted to a percentage, meaning that the award was based on all-important satisfaction levels rather than the number of votes. Airport Managing Director Dave Lees said, "This is a great credit to the brilliant team we have working at Southampton Airport, who have a real focus on customer service. It is particularly meaningful because the award is based on the impartial opinions of well-travelled people." The airport fought off competition from the likes of London City, Newcastle, Birmingham and Liverpool to take the top gong. Phoebe Smith, editor of Wanderlust, said, "With its good public transport links, great facilities and flights to 33 destinations from Aberdeen to Verona, it's a worthy winner."
Council tax set to be frozen again. Winchester civic chiefs were due to meet to set this year's council tax last night on Thursday. The ruling Tory group is proposing that the current Band D rate of £126.27 should be retained for 2014-15. It has been the same since 2010-11. The government stipulated that any council which freezes council tax will receive additional funding, the equivalent to having set a 1% increase on the 2013-14 level. County Council, responsible for by far the largest part of people's bills, was also due to confirm the same rate as last year when it meets today. Councillor Stephen Godfrey, portfolio holder for finance, said parking charges in Winchester District are also being frozen. There were positive financial signs locally, including business rate income and planning fees going up, as well as better performance at the Guildhall, he told the Overview and Scrutiny Committee on Monday.
And this one is, "It all adds up for Pupils Charity Challenge." Pupils at King's Somborne Primary School have turned their skills at maths into a method of raising cash for UNICEF. The children took part in the UNICEF Day for Change by undertaking a sponsored Mathletics Challenge. The school is hoping to raise enough money to purchase two UNICEF Schools in a Box, which cost £150 each. Each box is designed to help at least 40 children to continue their education after a disaster, such as an earthquake or a flood. Head teacher Julie Way said, "All pupils were sponsored for the challenge, and the more questions they got right, the higher the sponsorship went." The Day for Change is an opportunity for schools to learn about children living across the world in the hope that it inspires students to take action. UNICEF says there are 68 million children in the world that don't go to school. And there's a picture of a smiling group of King Somborne Junior children holding up their Mathletic Challenge sponsorship forms.
Military Museum in 93,000 lottery boost. The museum of the former Royal Hampshire Regiment is undergoing a major upgrade following a grant of £93,500 from the Heritage Lottery Fund. Searle's House in Southgate Street, Winchester, is expected to reopen in the spring with a totally new exhibition area covering the long history of the regiment, which was always known as the Tigers. Lieutenant Colonel Colin Bullitt, the regimental secretary, said 85% of the museum, together with its collection of artefacts, will be transformed as a result of the funding. "We are giving the museum a totally different look, and when it opens to the public again, visitors will see a huge difference," he said. "We have a tremendous collection, and the range of improvements now underway will show it off to a far greater effect. For example, the upgrade will include a series of interactive displays, such as a large 3D map of Italy showing the Tigers' campaigns during the Second World War. There will also be a number of touchscreen displays, while other areas of the museum will be dedicated to displays covering the regiment's role during the Boer, First and Second World Wars. We have a fine collection of medals, but we have never had enough room to tell the stories which lie behind these decorations," said Lieutenant Colonel Bullitt. The changes now being made to the museum will mean we will be able to tell these stories, and the displays will mean much more to our visitors. Exhibits will include 6 of the 10 Victoria Crosses, the highest accolade for valour a soldier can receive, awarded to members of the Royal Hampshire Regiment, disbanded in 1992 under government defence cuts. The Hampshire Regiment was formed in 1881 from the merger of the 37th North Hampshire Regiment of Foot and the 67th South Hampshire Regiment of Foot, along with the militia and rifle volunteers of the county. In 1946, the regiment was awarded the title of Royal Hampshire Regiment in recognition of its service during World War II. The regiment was merged with the Queen's Regiment in 1992 to become the present-day Princess of Wales's Royal Regiment.
Have your say on library changes. Staff and mobile services in line for the Acts. Library users to be asked what they think of plans to change services in light of massive cutbacks to county council services. Some branches in Hampshire are to lose paid staff, and 100 stops deemed unviable face the chop as the authority bids to shave off 12% from its budget. Under plans to save £130,000, the 5-strong fleet of mobile libraries will be reduced to 3 by next year. But the service, which takes library books to isolated rural areas, nursing homes and the housebound, will also be slashing stops by nearly a third. Those under threat include 3 in Fareham, 6 in Eastleigh, 8 in the Romsey area, 10 in Winchester and 26 in the New Forest. As reported, this comes on top of threats to 3 libraries which are expected to shed their staff to save £50,000, including Milford-on-Sea. It is hoped volunteers will step forward as they did last year for libraries in North Baddersley and Stanmore, but if no one comes forward, the libraries face closure. The transfer of these 2 libraries to local community groups has been very successful, says County Council bosses. The opening hours at both these libraries have increased since their transfer to the local community, with Stanmore's book issues increasing by 14% and North Baddersley's by 18%. Views are also being sought on a review of the least used mobile library stops. The consultation runs until Friday, May the 2nd. To take part in this public consultation, visit hants.gov.uk/library and complete an online form or email library.customerscomments@hants.gov.uk. Alternatively, consultation forms are available at Milford-on-Sea Library and are being given out to mobile library customers.
And this one is praise for retirement home plan. Planning chiefs have praised a new housing development for Bishop's Waltham. They gave the green light for 34 retirement homes at the Travers Yard scrap business on Coppice Hill. The proposal from McCarthy and Stone was voted through unanimously at committee. McCarthy and Stone recently completed a public consultation, which was met with a generally favourable response from residents, as well as the parish council. The application drew 7 letters of objection, though, with road safety issues chief among the concerns. But city councillors voted unanimously in favour of the development. Councillor Robert Johnston said, "This was a well-presented application and a well-presented report from the officers, so I support it." Councillor David McLean said, "The number of phone calls I have had from people who have found this to be a development in keeping with the area is one of the reasons I shall be supporting this." Under the deal, McCarthy and Stone will have to meet 19 conditions, including pedestrian crossing improvements at Coppice Hill, a contribution of nearly £400,000 towards affordable housing and £7,000 towards providing open space.
Artists' work on show in London. A Winchester artist will see his work showcased at his first London exhibition. Lifelong painter John Pothecary, 60, from Stanmore will display five of his pieces featured in contemporary painting at the Brick Lane Gallery. It was starting yesterday, actually. Originally from Twyford, Mr. Pothicary studied at the Portsmouth Art College and went on to work as a designer for Winchester Graphics. His designs for a range of stationery were bought by Scribbler in Covent Garden and Ryman, and his work has also been featured in New Scientist magazine after he won a postcard design competition for the National Council of Civil Liberties. He said, "It's great. It's a great venue and opportunity, and the Brick Lane Gallery has a great reputation. The last couple of years, I have been just painting, and it's really coming together. I'm just starting to feel that it's really happening now." The exhibition features 10 artists from around the world and runs until March the 2nd. For more details, visit thebricklanegallery.com.
Police hit by a new wave of budget cuts. Hampshire Police has announced sweeping cuts that could change policing across the county for years to come. Hundreds of jobs will be lost, police stations will be shut, and roles will be changed as the force looks to save a further £25 million by 2016. It is the second wave of budget cuts following the £55 million saving Hampshire Constabulary will make up to April this year, with the loss of 456 officer jobs and 520 staff posts. Now a further 535 officer and staff positions will be axed, but the exact numbers of those who will lose their jobs have yet to be finalised, as further refinements to the final plans are expected to be made. Among the savings would be a 15% reduction in the number of chief superintendents and superintendents up to 2016. The same reduction is planned for chief inspectors and inspectors. The number of sergeants is expected to be reduced by 23%, the biggest planned reduction across the frontline staff. PCs will be cut by 20%. But the number of PCSOs, that's Police Community Support Officers, 333, will remain the same, with no cuts forecast. Hampshire's Police and Crime Commissioner, Simon Hayes, confirmed that further underused and expensive police stations across Hampshire will be closed to make savings from the force's estimates budget. It is not known which police stations are at risk, but Mr. Hayes said that the introduction of cheaper beat stations, such as the ones opened in the Northam and Redbridge areas of Southampton, have been a success within the communities. He added that potential plans for the police to move from its current Winchester headquarters to another location are still being looked at. Despite the latest cuts, Hampshire's force will introduce a dedicated senior police officer in neighbourhoods and prevention teams, redraw boundaries to enable better partnerships with councils and other public sector partners, and introduce intelligence-led services to protect the most vulnerable sectors of society. The authority also stressed that officers will still respond to the most serious emergency calls as usual, and neighbourhood policing will remain a priority. And officers across Hampshire will become the first in the country to wear video cameras as the force looks to make the most of technology. The Chief Constable, Andy Marsh, said he hoped that people across Hampshire and the Isle of Wight understood that the cuts are not made out of choice, and he fears that further government cuts could harm the authority. He said, "There have been £80 million worth of cuts since 2010 when I first arrived, but I hope the public will continue to appreciate the outstanding dedication of the police officers of Hampshire Constabulary. I believe in policing, and I am passionate about it. I still believe we can do an outstanding job for the public and protect them."
And this one is Friends Kick-Off Fundraiser in Memory of Francis. It was a chance for people young and old to remember a man who had played a part in their lives. Football coach Francis Breen's death of a suspected heart attack on the touchline during a youth football match left both family and the community shocked. But they paid tribute to his work with a football contest in his honour, which raised more than £300 for charity. Now the fundraiser looks set to become an annual event. Both Mr. Breen's daughter, Patricia, 24, and his son, Jonathan, 23, took part in the tournament at Crestwood College in Eastleigh. Their team 1A triumphed, taking home the Francis Breen Trophy. The runners-up were 3B and organiser Thomas Palmer's team 2A finished third, with medals presented by Mr. Breen's wife Jasmine. Mr. Breen of Charles Knott Gardens, Bannister Park, Southampton, was coaching the mighty athletes under-9s in Bishop's Waltham when he suffered a suspected heart attack in November last year. The 59-year-old semi-retired civil servant had helped set up the mighty athletes 2 years ago. Working alongside his daughter Patricia, they aim to get underprivileged children into football and inspire youngsters into sport. But he had coached clubs and young footballers for many years, and one of them, Thomas Palmer, 20, decided to organise the football contest in Mr. Breen's honour. It raised £366 for Tradecraft, a charity chosen by the Breen family, which tries to eliminate poverty through trade. Around 70 players took part in the 10-team five-a-side contest.
Volunteers' chance to learn countryside skills. A Hampshire charity is calling on people with a taste for the great outdoors. Hampshire and the Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust is looking for volunteers to learn more about traditional countryside skills, such as fencing and hedge laying, and to help look after livestock as part of a new scheme. The Winchester Conservation Skill Project, a Heritage Lottery-funded programme, aims to recruit volunteers, giving them the chance to learn new skills, including plant and animal identification, ecological surveying techniques, and first aid. Anyone over the age of 18 can take part every Thursday and will be held at both Winnall Moors, St Catherine's Hill and Broughton Down. The work to be undertaken includes maintaining habitats such as water meadows and chalk grassland.
New appointment at football club. Winchester City Football Club has appointed a new commercial manager to launch a new campaign to improve the ground. Jane Carley has been appointed in a bid to launch the fundraising campaign to enhance the stadium to Southern League standards. Ms. Carley, who formerly worked as fundraising manager and events coordinator at Wessex Cancer Trust, has worked for nearly 20 years in networking. Her first project at the club is to raise £10,000 for the Ground Grading Fund to enable the club to be promoted back from Wessex League to the Southern League South and West. The club is required to meet the National Ground Grading Category D by March the 31st. In order to do this, specific areas have to be upgraded, including resurfacing certain areas within the ground and providing an extra covered stand and medical room. Paul Murray, club chairman, said, "We are pleased to have Jane join us as commercial director here at Winchester City Football Club. I have known Jane for a long time, and I know that she brings a wealth of experience in fundraising and event management to the club."
And this one is Rory, ready for his big chance. A Winchester schoolboy has been awarded a place at a celebrated dance company. Rory Clark, 10, a pupil at St Bede Church of England Primary School, has become the first young person from Winchester to make it to Zoo Nation Youth, which has 26 members from around the UK aged 8 to 20. He will have the opportunity to perform around the country and learn from some of the best hip-hop dancers in the world. It is also hoped that he will dance in Groove On Down the Road in London this summer. Rory started dancing 2 years ago at an after-school club and currently competes in competitions across the country as part of the Integer 8's Under 12 Boys Dance Crew Swarm. And there's a photograph of red-headed Rory dancing away in trainers and tracksuit.
A soldier's life. The English Civil War came to Winchester last Sunday with a reenactment by members of the Sealed Knot Society. Muskets and pikes were brandished outside the West Gate as children and families were invited to learn more about the life of soldiers and see for themselves how musketeers, pikemen and followers would have mustered at the old gateway into the city. The day also saw the opening of the Westgate Museum for the new season after its winter closure. And we have with this article a very interesting picture of all these musketeers aiming their rifles, presumably at the cameraman.
A pair nominated for technology prizes. Two Winchester women have been nominated in this year's 2014 FDM Every Woman in Technology Awards. Jane Stockdill-Mander, WebSphere Portfolio Product Manager for IBM UK, and Sadie Hawkins, Executive Assistant for IBM UK, have each been whittled down as one of four finalists in their individual categories. Ms. Stockdill-Mander has been nominated for Innovator of the Year, and Ms. Hawkins as Rising Star of the Year. Sheila Flavel, Chief Operating Officer and Founder Director of title sponsor FDM Group, said, "We are thrilled to be able to partner with everywoman.com once again and to support them in their mission to encourage more women into IT careers. FDM is fully committed to helping more women further their careers within this rewarding and creative industry and opening the pipeline for future talent." The winners will be announced at an awards ceremony on March the 19th at the Sheraton Park Lane in London.
A spot of paint for Winchester Square. If Winchester hadn't already been the upmarket place to do a spot of shopping, then the opening of a new paint store should do the trick. Nationally renowned Farrow and Ball paint producers are opening a new shop in the square next month, and have invited the locals to come and have a look at a special event on March the 1st. The Paint by Numbers Day is open to all between 10:30 and 5:30 p.m, where people can paint murals onto canvas using specially selected Farrow and Ball paint and enjoy some Farrow and Ball biscuits. The store is due to open on Monday between 9 a.m. and 5:30 p.m, Monday to Saturday, and between 11 a.m. and 5 p.m. on Sundays.
Cold case team look at historic murder. A 15-year-old murder mystery has flared back into life. Kevin John Palmer disappeared in March 1999 and was last seen heading by taxi towards Bishop's Waltham. Police believe he is dead, but earlier this month dug up the garden of the Gordon Arms pub in Fareham. Mr. Palmer, who was in his 30s, went missing after a night out with friends and has never been found. It is thought Mr. Palmer may have been involved in a fight with two other passengers in the taxi. Detectives from the major investigation team are pursuing leads following a routine cold case review.
Spread traveller site, says town. Alsford's civic chiefs say they will resist plans for a new gypsy and traveller site unless other sites are provided across the Winchester district. The proposed town plan would see a small site of about 6 pitches as part of the housing and industrial development off Sun Lane. But town councillors are to tell Winchester planners that they want to see other places help hit the target of 35 pitches and for the site to be managed by the city council. A town council resolution said, "If there are no fair, proportionately appropriate sites in other locations, then we would be unable to seek support from the town." But it has warned that if sites are not identified, then plans for gypsy and traveller sites will have to be improved. One Alsford resident, who asked not to be named, said, "People who don't want the 5 pitches are being accused of being racist. It's unfair that Alsford is supposed to provide the same amount as Winchester, a large town." Meanwhile, town councillors have finalised their response to the city council over the town plan. It's also worried about traffic for the Sun Lane development and says it should be conditional on new access off the A31 Alsford bypass. Councillor Roy Gentry said he would like to see another access off the Bishop Sutton Road, which villagers there strongly oppose. Traffic slowing measures should be introduced on Sun Lane, including a wide curve outside Sunhill Schools that would create more parking space for use by the schools and proposed burial ground and allotments. They also want to see a buffer zone of up to 100 metres of land between the new development and Bishop Sutton. Farmland west of New Farm Road should be designated for recreational use, meeting a local need and protecting it from development.
and we have more car parking spaces. Parking problems look set to be eased after civic chiefs agreed to extend spaces across the Winchester district. There will be more parking within the city centre, Bishop's Waltham and Wickham as part of a proposed major repair programme. The proposal could see up to £600,000 spent developing car parks over the next 2 years. Councillors voted to have an additional 40 spaces in Wickham. Reports conducted over the last 12 months indicated the village car park was at capacity most days. The proposal should see the extension of the existing car park at Wickham Station. A further 70 spaces were agreed for Bishop's Waltham, of which the most viable site identified was Jubilee Hall. The new well-being centre currently being developed by the Parish Council will incorporate new spaces. The programme, as approved by Cabinet in February last year, has seen works undertaken at Cheswell Street multi-storey car park, including the partial replacement of the drainage system, replacement of some damaged internal fire doors, and extensive painting at the site. Some £51,000 has been set aside for new LED lighting on the 8 floors at Cheswell, saving future energy costs. According to a report, nearly 114,000 pay-by-phone parking transactions took place last year.
I'm afraid that concludes the extract for the week ending 21st of February 2014. Thank you to our editors, Bill Argles and Irene Dowding. Thanks to our copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks to our readers, Shirley Purnell.
Goodbye.
Noel Thorpe-Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Favourable, thank you for listening. Goodbye for now, and I hope you have an enjoyable week ahead. When you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet with a laminated card, and please place your address label inside the wallet too, and return the wallet as soon as possible. Thank you and goodbye again.